I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
This week on Meet and Three, meet four of our HRN Hall of Fame inductees. These prolific individuals are writers who have changed the way we talk about food. We'll take a look at the journeys that shaped their literary voices.
I was heading off into the unknown to spend my junior year of college in Paris.
We'll explore the culinary landscape they work within.
You know, it was that whole self-made American idea that you can just kind of create a new world from scratch, including a new way of eating.
And look at the transformative effect that their work has on what we eat and where it comes from.
It gets down to management deciding that humane handling is important. You've got to have management that cares. And if management doesn't care, then you're going to have a bunch of bad stuff.
You can learn more about HRN's 10th Anniversary Hall of Fame at heritageradionetwork.org/Hall of Fame. And don't forget to subscribe to Meet and Three wherever you listen to podcasts. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E.
Good morning. Today is Thursday, August 8th. This is the Main Course OG. I'm Emily Pearson. Got a little cold today. I'm going to do my best not to cough directly into the microphone or at you, Patrick.
Okay, fair enough.
How are you, my co-host?
Good. Congratulations on your new, the premiere of your new American Cure Masters charcuterie.
You sound so well versed with it.
Yeah. No, so what is it? It's a new charcuterie arm of Heritage.
Well, as our listeners know, Patrick and I are both a part of Heritage Foods, and this is a recent premiere for us on the wholesale and the mail order side. We are working with some of the best artisans in the country to make exclusively 100% Heritage breed salumi. So that's salami, it's country ham, it's prosciutto.
It's instantly the most interesting charcuterie program in
America.
I'm
thinking of putting it on a shirt so when I walk into the room,
with
they
prices?
Just know. With prices, yeah. Everyone knows I'm just immediately the most interesting person in the room. So, wow. But it's pretty cool. We're really proud of the Cure Masters we work with, some who have been around for years and some who are newer. But would love to talk more with everybody about that another time. Today is, I can't believe, the second week of August. It's flying. Patrick, you're still looking good in shorts.
I still think it's the same amount of time. It just seems faster.
People say as you get older, time moves faster. Is it true?
They say athletes see things slower. Like if you're a really good basketball player, the games, everything looks slower to you. And if you're not a very good player, everything looks fast and the game's controlling you.
That's because like, you're just terrified and it's moving faster than you can handle. All right. We also have our good friend Eric Koss of the Alameda Sun on the line, as always. Thanks for joining us, Eric.
Sure. Good morning. I'm actually calling in on a brand new phone this week. Do I sound better? Do I sound more attractive?
Are subscriptions up? You were able to afford a legitimate phone finally?
What does a brand new phone mean? Not rotary?
No, this is a state-of-the-art Yealink fully functional office phone, and every desk has one. The wonderful thing about it is the service I have automatically upgrades my phones on occasion when they need to be. So I didn't even have to pay anything additional, Patrick.
No Mazel tov.
Needed.
Well, you sound extra clear and wonderful this morning. So we have a full house. I wish this was TV so everyone could see. We have some awesome guests for the Weekly Grill. We have our good friend, Chef Jimmy Tu of Bunker Vietnamese, who rolled up on his bike here this morning. I'm sure that was, you live in the neighborhood or you're just the restaurants in here
I'm not
in
too far.
On the Ridgewood Bushwick border?
Yeah, I have a spot in Ridgewood, so It's not too far.
Cool. Well, Jimmy runs a powerhouse Vietnamese restaurant that we absolutely love. He's been a longtime supporter of Heritage. And I know Patrick's been following him since his days at Tigerland in the city.
Next to Benny's Burritos, Lower East Side, East Village.
Yeah, we go back a long ways.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was amazing. You were a real pioneer with Tigerland, that's for sure.
Well, we're going to talk more about Bunker and Jimmy's history in a little bit. Our other guest for the Weekly Grill is the team from Winsun and Winsun Bakery. We have Josh Q, Trig Brown, and Jesse Chappelle in the house. Woohoo! You guys are thank goodness
expanding.
That you're not Vietnamese also, because then I'd have to say that these are my equally favorite restaurants. But Taiwanese American cuisine, about to launch another location, doing breakfast and lunch.
It's amazing.
We are super excited.
I'm trying to do a lot of things there, and hopefully we'll be open in 2 weeks. A little less than that, actually. So
we won't hold you to it. We know New York City is a tough place.
We're hoping this year for sure.
Oh no!
No,
yes.
No, I know.
This year, maybe next.
Your restaurant wasn't big enough to deal with all the people that wanted to eat your food, and so you ended up needing to do a more fast concept.
Sort of. So I mean, we definitely wanted to expand our abilities and be able to produce and, you know, do more things that we couldn't do with the size of our kitchen.
Cool.
Mostly,
so, but yeah.
And then we also have in the house two young men from El Puente's Williamsburg Leadership Center, who we will bring in a little bit later. So we are really full here. We're excited.
Because they don't fit.
They
can't fit them in there right now.
No, they're all in. Everyone's
no,
sitting here.
No, everybody's in.
Oh, they're going to chime
out.
That
we, I don't know. Yeah, say good morning. Oh.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
How you guys doing?
Oh, good, good, good.
Is this your first radio appearance?
Yeah.
How many you can spit in that?
I'm nervous. Are they hippie jibbies?
Give us the 15-second thing on what your organization does.
So, basically, our organization is called HELP, and this means Help Everyone Live and Prosper. It's basically a thing that we want to do to help homeless people. Like, we give care packet that consists of hand sanitizer, women products, toothbrush, lotion, anything that homeless people can use when they don't have hygiene.
I see.
So that's like awesome. And right here in the neighborhood. We are going to jump right in to our segment, The Weekly Based. We have a very important question for all of you. How much do you spend on Amazon?
Zero.
Per month?
Zero.
Eric? Same here, actually. I don't have an account.
Eric! Wow.
Good for you.
I borrow other people's accounts when I need something.
The truth comes out. He uses someone else's Prime account.
State your
name. Jesse?
Hey, I'm Jesse from Winsun Bakery. On average, I think per month we spend maybe $100.
Personal or work?
Yeah, we're talking about personal or work.
Personal.
Either personal, one. Definitely like $300.
All right, and of work, Winsun's needs, 100?
Yeah, I'd say about 100.
Did you know this about him before he came to work with the mom-and-pop business, that he's essentially anti-mom-and-pop business because he spends $300
of his own? I don't know. I mean, I think my frame of reference is, you know, I look at Amazon the way I look at the world through my phone, and I have an iPhone 4. So
Amazon won't load
then,
anymore.
No, whatever Amazon was doing back when the 4S came out. So I think there's still a mom and pop shop back then.
I think you're right. That's so funny. Are you just not willing to give up that iPhone 4S?
I'm just lazy.
Okay. It's a testament to you. You haven't lost it. You haven't broken it.
How much do you guys spend on Amazon?
Do you guys use Amazon?
No. Nah,
good.
Really.
Good.
That depends. Like, for work, when we need to get something for the organization, it's a few hundred. But personally, not a cent.
All right.
Good.
Somebody's spending on it because that guy's the richest person in the world, right?
Yeah, somebody is spending on it. That's
Jimmy,
true.
Work, purse?
Work, I think about 200. 200 a month.
Personal?
Personal, maybe 300, 400.
Is that, is that because time? Of your kids? Is that because of
I buy a lot of supplements, books, but I also, you know, I still hit up the local bookshops and, you know.
Well, you went real mom and pop there. Bookshop.
I'm probably at like 100 a month, but I as we've discussed before, mine's, don't roll your eyes at me,
is
Patrick.
Is that true?
This week I had a few random, no. I buy my like toilet paper and paper towels and things like that. Although this week I ordered it from Walgreens and one of the items in the box exploded and was on over everything. And it's so wasteful. No. It went terrible. All right, what were you going to say, Josh?
I was going to say, you know, pet care products. Right, we all have pets, maybe.
No, but yeah, sure.
And, you know, Petland discounts recently closed down. The family didn't want to take over their father's business. And they closed down, what, how many shops was it? Like, upwards of, I don't know, 60?
Okay.
I'm happy that they survived longer than Pets for Less, which was the worst name shop of all time. I was like, who picked that name, Pets for Less?
This sounds like a very...
So you have moved your personal pet purchases to Amazon
right.
as a result of that
yeah. mom and now I don't have to lug, you know,
all right. So maybe you should write a letter to those children and thank them, but I don't know, maybe
no,
not.
No, no, no.
All right, so we actually, a friend of ours, James Wetlore, who we do Goat-tober with every year, sent me this article. He said, partially knowing that you guys were all coming in, according to The Atlantic, online delivery is surging and eating in is the new dining out. In 2015, for the first time on record, Americans spent more money at restaurants than at grocery stores. But another turn is coming. In 2020, they're saying more than half of restaurant spending was projected to be off-premise. In other words, deliveries, drive-thrus, and takeaway meals will soon be overtaking inside restaurant dining. Thoughts?
Actually,
yeah,
can
Eric?
I jump in on this
sure.
one? Because, you know, I grew up on the East Coast. My good friend lived in Brooklyn for a long time. And when I went to visit him, the fascinating thing to me was that he was like, what do you want to eat? I'm like, it's 2 a.m, man. We can't, what are you talking about? He's like, you can get whatever you want. This is in New York. We can order whatever you want and get it delivered. And I'm like, really? And it's like Indian food, delis, Italian, pizza, Vietnamese, whatever you want. You can get it delivered. And I think the rest of the world is actually finally catching up to New York in that way. Because now we have the DoorDash and all these other services that are making it possible for every restaurant to deliver. It's not just pizza and Chinese anymore.
Well, Barney's just shuttered a lot. You know, people don't want to go to a place. The only way you go to a place for sure is if it's like an experience, like the signature Barney's museum store with music and 5 floors.
What is Barney's? The department store?
Yeah, but like restaurants, people aren't going to a different neighborhood to go to a thing. They would much rather get it delivered.
I'd like to hear from the restaurant owners in the room. How are you guys, are you feeling this?
I mean, deliveries has been going up. I could see that year after year, and I don't know why, but it's, yeah, I mean, the convenience and also caviar spread all over the city, and our delivery's been, yeah, it's been great.
Was there ever a time where you didn't allow takeout when you were in your smaller location at Bunker?
No, we always did deliveries.
Yeah. Right, I guess it's
Tigerland, there was a different culture back then, right?
Yeah.
People would call you on the phone and be like, can I come pick up?
Yeah, we get a lot of pickups. That was the city, you know, we were in an actual neighborhood where we moved to the first Bunker was out in the middle of nowhere. And so. Mm-hmm.
So when you made that decision to move there, did you like say, okay, this is going to work also because obviously we have certain people that are going to travel for us, but secondly, because of delivery? Like, is that a determination that's made these days?
Yeah, that was always in the business plan.
So is that partially why you opened your second restaurant and more accessible?
Yeah, I mean, a huge part of it is because the original Winston restaurant can really only accommodate just so much. And so we really had to try and thread the needle on, like, being able to, you know, satisfy customer orders with just our dine-in customers alone. And we use caviar, but in a limited capacity. And that's definitely a huge part of what Winston Bakery's designed around, is to build out to accommodate so much more of that market. Because I think it is true that unless you're going to a restaurant that's genuinely exciting, however that excitement is calculated, people would just rather sit on their couch, which...
Patrick, you like eating out or you like ordering in?
I think the French concept of what a restaurant needs to be, with some old sommelier trying to up you on a wine and the taste, and that whole tasting thing doesn't even need to happen because the guy tastes it. You know what I mean? There's all these rituals, a big wine list, uncomfortableness, host stands.
So wait, where does that leave you? You want to be in a restaurant?
Restaurant's
or you don't?
A pain in the ass. A lot of restaurants are a pain in the ass. I love Bunker. It's a much more thing. You know, I love Winston, even though it's a traditional thing. You know, sommelier, and it's 3 hours, and you don't know what to tip. And, you know,
Patrick's worst nightmare for all of you in the room and listening is the 5-hour meal.
I love the meatball shop. You know, I love these people. Roberta's has it. They can get up. You can go out, smoke a cigarette. You know, it's got to become more than the, excuse me, oh, can I, so, you know, come in here and you get the napkin. The napkin falls. You have a waiter. It's a little uncomfortable.
I think it's a really, it's a challenge these days. And I think the restaurants that, you know, including Winsun and Bunker in the room that are succeeding are the ones that find that dynamic and that balance.
They're on the outlying
between
areas.
Having great high quality food and ingredients, a really great experience, someplace that you want to come back to, but nothing is stifling. You know,
but my kid can sit on the floor under the table. You know, he can walk around the place. It's more of like a...
Yeah.
You know, another French thing I don't like is that they have made... They are the only culture in the world where cheese is served after the meal and basically competing with dessert. So guess what? No one eats cheese because they don't want to stay an extra hour. The restaurant doesn't want to stay. So I'm telling Ann to launch a cheese appetizer campaign where it's a shared appetizer in addition to after they've ordered the appetizer for $19. So it increases check averages. And then I bet 80-90% of the tables
would want that.
Is there
room for the cheese appetizer at Winsun and or Bunker? Patrick would like to know.
No, I'm not asking for that. But I'm just saying the French style somehow like confines us and I think turns people into wanting to eat at home.
We have the stinky tofu, so it's pretty cheesy.
Yeah. The stinky tofu. All right.
But I agree with you with the dragged out tasting courses. Like we just did a 8-course wine pairing dinner and it ended up with, karaoke and it was, it was just more fun, laid back and...
It has the place. I just don't want to eat like that most of the time.
Yeah.
All right. So what is, I'm transitioning here. What is America's take on Vietnam, Taiwan, and their cuisines?
I think I'm qualified to answer
that.
No,
Patrick?
Just kidding.
Josh, you want to kick us off?
What is America's take on Vietnam, Taiwan, and their cuisines? America's take, so you have the mom and pop shops, kind of born out of just needing to work and feed, the same people that came over with you and their, next generation and whatnot. And then you have guys like us who are, learned through those experiences and traveling to those countries and also growing up with a very American Western palate, like eating, spaghetti and meatballs every day or Mott's apple juice every day. And you kind of have that experience toggled in with the other, and Trig can definitely speak more to this. But his experience has been working in New American, fine dining restaurants pretty much since he was a young teenager, and I think for him, he could probably speak for himself about Taiwanese cuisine and.
So, what is the Americans' take on Taiwanese cuisine?
I think it's just enthusiastic. I think people are, expanding their understanding of regional cuisines, and I think people are excited to eat good food and learn something while they do it in general.
I think it's been a surprise. People didn't know that Taiwan necessarily had a different, people didn't know where to place it. Now, Vietnam, people have a very firm opinion on.
But is that because that more Americans in recent years are doing trips to Vietnam? Like, is it that more Americans are familiar with the street foods or the chaka lavang? Am I saying that right? Yeah. So all these dishes that people
write
about.
But there's a historical connection between the U.S. and Vietnam as well, So, that adds to why more people know about that cuisine, I think.
Hey, guys. Vietnamese is much more widespread out here on the West Coast. There's a lot of pho places, serving, I suppose, like traditional style Vietnamese in small shops all over the East Bay and San Francisco. I mean, there's a lot. And it's really good stuff. I enjoy it. They do a lot of puns on the word pho. Like the new place just opened on Park Street over here called Just Pho You or something like that.
Is that for real? Wow.
That's for real.
Jimmy, you got any puns on your menu?
Oh, we had plenty to start with, but yeah.
Have they worked their way off?
It's kind of died out a little bit, but...
So what is it? I mean, it's a very refined... To me, I always imagine it as the most refined of the Asian cuisines. I don't know. Is that possible to say?
I think it's...
delicate?
It's light. Yeah. It's, I think it's one of the healthiest. But I feel Vietnamese cuisine has grown a lot in the last 5-10 years. Before that, it was mostly mom and pop shops. And I think in the last, 4 or 5 years, and... there's been so many more interesting restaurants, and I think the cuisine is growing, and people are being more familiar with a lot of other dishes besides like pho and banh mi's, and I think that's a great thing. And
well, that's awesome.
Well, speaking of mom and pop shops, oh, I stole your question.
No, it's not.
Oh, sorry. What effect, if any, has your business had on your respective neighborhoods?
I like that question.
That's an easy one for me. On our front page this week, the Alameda Sun has a picture of this property that hasn't been taking proper care of the weeds. It's obviously like a fire hazard and stuff like that, and it's a huge piece of property that is owned by this super rich guy. So we're kind of shaming him into mowing his lawn, basically. So
no, he should be allowed to do it.
Local neighborhood all the time.
Great gardens. I love that house. 12,000 cats live there. This is great. Well, I like that they're crazy people.
Well, the neighbors are scared that it's going to, cause a fire and going to spread to their house.
I agree that the neighbors are scared, but I don't think for the right reasons.
So your neighbor is not bettering the neighborhood, so to speak. Winsun, I don't know. You guys are off the Graham stop here in, the Montrose stop here in Williamsburg.
Kind of pioneered, right, that neighborhood a little bit. There weren't that many restaurants that I was drawn to go to. There were a couple of cool bars, right?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Duck Duck is kind of the other anchor right on that corner area. And, we've definitely been able to, synergize with them. People are waiting in line, they'll swing over to Duck Duck. We'll obviously recommend them as well while they wait. But also just general bodies on the street. I think that's had an effect or a huge effect on the neighborhood and folks that have been around there.
Do they shop other places, pick up cigarettes or candy or so at the other delis? Like, they see a lot more people. Plus, you have outdoor seating.
Yeah. I mean, jewel sales have skyrocketed at the deli across the street since we opened.
So your customers are directly driving the sale of the e-cigarette?
Yeah, the jewel fool.
I would say the DJ scene at Duck Duck has an equally impactful...
Oh, yeah.
No, but, we've watched your block change. I mean, there's tons of new construction. There's new storefronts that are opening. Do you feel like you guys were part of the drive behind changing the landscape on that block? Whether it's for...
No, yeah.
I know you're involved in real estate too, Josh.
We definitely bookended that. I mean, it's funny, even when we first opened, there'd be a lot of brokers, that would be selling buildings in the area or trying to sell, multifamily houses. And they would bring, their clients to Winsun to eat at the bar. Look at this place. Look at these lights. They have a cocktail menu. Blah, blah, blah. And, obviously as we've grown, I guess it's a little harder for them to get, but they can probably just walk by, look how crazy busy and look how many white people are here or whatever. This is
great. I think Winsun is a measurement of gentrification in the neighborhood and how things have changed. I don't know. I see that as a good thing. And I assume you guys also want to maintain history of the neighborhood.
But is that why you opened your second place and designed it the way you did? Was it in mind to be in line with the type of places that had existed there before you?
So that happened, that the location being across the street was kind of our plan B, and a few other options for us didn't really work out. And we kind of embraced it and kind of developed this concept around it that we felt would work. And, as Jesse said earlier, we have, a ceiling with the kitchen over at Winsun. And, we've been super fortunate to
to have gotten so busy so quick, and you know, that's obviously kudos to the Trig and the Menu, but we wanted to be able to kind of do other things and explore, you know, other areas of Taiwanese cuisine, mm-hmm. That, you know, more or less we weren't doing as mm-hmm. much.
That's cool. So how do you guys dress your okra?
We need a translation, Patrick. Yeah, I'm with Eric. You got to tell us what that means.
What, do you guys grew up on the cement?
Yeah.
I mean, where I'm from, we pickle the okra.
Pickle it?
Yeah, oh. Yeah, right? Don't you just throw it in
but
your gumbo?
I would just to
what?
Touch back on the gentrification thing, like, yeah. You know, it's undeniable that, you know, we are definitely, like, part of that. But, you know, Josh has been in the neighborhood longer than I have, and we've been around the area for quite a while. And, you know, while, we opened up with the intention to, you know, plug the hood, and our everybody that lives around us, you know, new and old people alike, and we've always stressed accessibility within price point to make sure we can be inclusive of everybody around us. And, you know, we've gone to great lengths to preserve, you know, general character of the building and the area.
You guys don't change
a white person's talk.
Yeah. No, I bet
like, nobody has done more for the. But no, I'm kidding.
Well, you know, well, I love that you guys don't change the your outside signage. Has been you were pretty true to the original building, right?
Yeah, recreating the. You know, we have a lot of we like have a lot of friends in the neighborhood and people that we really you know would be sad not to see every day, and I think we go to great lengths to take care of those people and
would
make sure
call
we
yourself
don't push
the
them
mayor
away.
Of the block?
Josh probably could be the mayor. Yeah, definitely.
Now,
yeah.
Jimmy, you broke a new ground with two restaurants. I mean, you were in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah, when we first were the first bunker in Ridgewood, I thought we definitely brought a lot of attention to the area and to a lot of new businesses moving in. Yeah, we were in, like, the Times for real estate, like, 4 or 5 times because of Ridgewood.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a growing and pretty dynamic area.
Yeah,
and
it's far from, I mean, when you get there, it's like a compound. There's a beekeepers there, or no, what do they make, mushrooms, mycologists?
You're at 99 Scott. What else is in that building?
Yeah. This one's pioneering, too. This neighborhood's pioneering as well.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of new, exciting stuff, you know, coming in. Mm-hmm. Since we've been there, we're in a more of a industrial side of, like, let's say the Jefferson stop. And so, there's a whole bunch of new businesses moving in. And I feel like, yeah, we kind of started that with, I feel like a lot of people in their area are appreciative of what we offer as far as healthy options and
heritage
porks.
So how do you deal with failure? I mean, ask the chefs this. How do you guys deal with failure? For example, when you love a dish, you're so proud of it, but it just doesn't sell.
It doesn't bother me. I mean, failed so many times, I guess. I as long as I feel like you can't make everybody happy, but there's always a group that, you know, they appreciate it, and so as long as somebody likes it.
What do you think, Trey?
I definitely feel the same way. It's like, you know, sometimes you get way more excited about a dish than your customers are, and I think if you roll out a dish, you know, at first as a special and then work it onto the menu, it's pretty easy to tell whether it's going to be successful or not, and if people don't like it, then you don't run it again.
I basically, my specialty is medieval food. So people are like, I don't like it. I'm like, they had different palates, dude. I was very authentic to how they ate.
I think Damon Weiss had a Game of Thrones medieval food truck.
Wow.
When the first couple seasons were rolling out.
Do you know that's impossible? A medieval food
truck? No, they
truck?
Did. They sold like...
How do you have a truck? They didn't have
I mean,
truck.
You didn't see the Flintstones.
Yeah, right, that's true.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. All right.
Sneak a zucchini?
Yeah, Eric, we're going to need you to share a little bit of information with us about this next one. Eric would like you all to know that today, August 8th, is Sneak Some Zucchini Onto Your Neighbor's Porch Night. Apparently, this holiday was born in Pennsylvania by a farmer who didn't know how to get rid of all the excess zucchini he had grown. Eric, do tell.
Yeah, it's a national celebration. It happens every year. You guys aren't aware of it?
Patrick, watch out. I'm coming for you tonight with zucchini.
You know, zucchini always overproduces, right? My dad had a big garden when I was growing up and a zucchini plant in there, and it was always like way more zucchini than any human being could possibly eat. And then you try giving it away to people and they're like, oh great, a zucchini, and you know, half the time they're like overgrown to the point where it's not even that good to eat anymore. You're supposed to eat them when they're really small, but like then you have this, I don't know, concept like you're produce is supposed to be big.
So I think the chefs here are going to tell us you just run some extra specials. I think you just need some extra zucchini specials tonight.
But this does relate to the stress in the okra of the okra plant, as I'm sure everybody knows. If it's kind of underachieving, you whack it. You kind of whack it a little bit, and it really starts to overproduce. So we always talk about these meetings. How do you stress the okra? Which is like, get more out of it. So like our mail order clients, how do we get them to order 4 times a year instead of just 2 times a year? And so we're trying to stress the okra by whacking at it.
How do you get people to order delivery 5 nights a week instead of 2?
You, Trig himself delivers it.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm the chef. I'll put you on Instagram. Hey, our favorite customer. Stressing the okra, they'll reorder the next day.
Trig said he just pickles his okra.
You better order.
I have delivered food to customers before.
Did they know who you were?
No.
Were you tipped?
I did it for caviar because they fucked up.
Can someone call you and just order, and your guy delivers it, like on a bike or no?
You can, but you have to have insurance for that, and you have to like hire somebody to do, you know, the benefits of certain, you know, like Grubhub, Seamless, and you know, DoorDash and Caviar. There's, you know, certain levels of like, you know, of bad business that are practiced, but others, you know, are really good business models that help out small businesses. You know, and that's like one of the services they provide, but you know, sometimes they mess up and the people call the restaurant and give us an opportunity to.
I would like to see a return to delivery services. That's what I love about pizza place. You don't have to go through Caviar. You don't have to pay an extra $50. Also, Caviar, you will allow you to order something like across 30 neighborhoods. It takes an hour.
But
there's a radius if you call the place. They're like, we're not going there.
So on that note, if you want to get Bunker, I can get it in Cobble Hill because of the Bunker at the DeKalb Market. They're delivering out of there.
Does it bother you that your food might travel an hour before it gets to someone?
We always tell them to, like, let's say the pho, to reheat the stock, but No, not really.
Okay.
I eat the same thing when I take it home. You know, I eat it like, it ends up eating like 2 hours later. And
he's like, it's been sitting in my car for 2 hours.
Are you able to get like food from your place of birth? Not out in Brooklyn, since your transplants.
The Pavilion at Mount Sinai Hospital? Dr. Brill?
So far away. Both of you guys are... Yeah.
Trig's trying to say, can us Upper West and Upper East Siders from Manhattan get the delicious things of our youth in Brooklyn?
Yes.
I don't. Will they cross the bridge? I think lower Manhattan businesses might deliver into Brooklyn. I do not think Uptown.
It's the guy. What's the company that does? It's like the back doorway to get food.
Oh, those bastards!
Like basically, they're like your independent courier. You hire them.
Postmates.
And they, you know, use their own money and whatnot.
I think there should be like Uber pickup, Uber stay, Uber doorman, Uber boyfriend.
Eat in the
just
car.
To freak out your mother-in-law.
That's called Tinder.
We're going to make you all sign an NDA for that one. Patrick had a new brilliant idea, Uber boyfriend.
I did it. I used to order Chinese all the time, and they would come within seconds, partially because the guy's bicycle pedals powered an oven in his bicycle basket. He could cook while he came. It was amazing. Sick. We got food within 10 seconds.
I will say that people who do order delivery and takeout often, you know, and if you don't, you know, definitely urge you guys to, like, see about call-in options because the restaurant gets more money for that. They prefer that.
Most always of the time. Ask for that.
Yeah.
And then you're dealing with someone you talk to.
I actually called a restaurant the other day and I said, it was a restaurant I normally call and pick up from in my neighborhood. And I actually said to the guy who took the call, I was like, how would you prefer for me to order? And he was like, well, it's like kind of up to you. He's like, these are your options, menu pages, whatever. And I was like, can I just order with you by phone?
You seem nice.
And he said, yeah. And I was like, and will you deliver it? He was like, yeah, I have my delivery guy too. That's and I was good. Like, okay. I'm like, FYI, the thing on your website's not working.
He's fuck like, caviar. I'm paying $99 for two hamburgers. Well, it wouldn't be a complete episode without mentioning our favorite royal, Meghan Markle. And we recently read about some of her favorite foods.
In case pasta, you're all wondering, for when she comes to visit.
Pasta, French fries,
fish tacos,
and wine. So what...
Are you guys fans of the royals?
I mean, my mother is a gigantic Anglophile, so I think by osmosis, I still have a soft spot for it, although... I can't tell if that's like the same thing as like guilty pleasure music loving. But when I find that someone who we're supposed to revere as a demigod, likes wine, like that just, who doesn't like wine? Like
I specifically read that she really likes rosé in the summertime.
Oh.
Maybe you could let your mom know.
Traveling.
Yeah. Well, the two things that are interesting, pasta's interesting because basically pasta is the cheapest way to eat, right? It's the Italian pho, right? It's just simple noodles. It costs 10 cents to make. You can season it a gazillion ways. And fish tacos. I think that's kind of cool she mentioned that. That's ode to her LA.
She grew up in LA.
Well, I just want to point out that in a previous episode, we tried to guess what we would feed Meghan Markle, and somebody suggested fish tacos, and I think it might have been me. But
all right, now I know,
yeah, so
might have been.
It might have been, but and I was also the one who sent you that article.
You were, you were. Thank you, Eric. It's good to know that when we're off the air, you're still thinking of us and our and
always.
So
East Coast friends.
So we're going to take a quick break, but after the break, we're going to be chatting with two young men from El Puentes Williamsburg Leadership Center, who you heard from earlier, Ryan and John Carlos. They've started a project called HELP, but I want to ask all of you, what charities do you each support?
Because that's a charity they work with to help the homeless.
Charity
all right,
that
so just start to laundry list all the charities you support.
So Winsun, since... we opened, we've been throwing parties here and there, and a lot of the proceeds go to Planned Parenthood.
Huh.
It's a big one, but nice. You know, still
good for support. You guys.
Yeah.
How about you guys?
We had a church do the pick up our excess food.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
What about you guys?
Personally, who do you support?
Personally, no matter what. Charity, I'd like to help anybody who's
you started
in need
your own charity.
Yeah. I was gonna say that, so
go for it.
We need all the word we can get, so like everybody help, you know,
help.
How do you help? Right. What's the website?
How we help is
How can we help you?
How can we help
how can you?
You
help us just get the word out,
get
as
the
much
word
as
out
possible. Like, I mean, yeah, you can. Offer things, but the best thing to do is let everyone know so that we can
what do we say? Tell us. So we supposed to tell homeless people or
anyone,
media people?
It's not just homeless people. It's like anyone who needs help. We're there to kind of
You're specifically partnered with a homeless shelter that's in the Williamsburg mm-hmm. area?
Yeah.
So people can go to, what is the homeless shelter?
It was around February the last time I went there. We was giving out all food to homeless people. I was like during the winter, it was really cold, but I don't really remember the address, but that was like the last I think.
Yeah, it was. And then we started doing our own thing, and then we had people coming in, and we did outreach to find as many people as we could on foot, so that you know they won't have to find us. We can just find them.
That's awesome.
It's excellent. Well, I mean, basically the point I was thinking we would make is because we asked that question a few months ago. And basically, I think our generation maybe doesn't support charity as much. We consider if we like something on Instagram as supporting, like I support Joe Biden because I like him. But what Joe Biden really needs is $100. And I think many years ago, it was much more of a culture where you licked an envelope, you put a $25 check in, and it went to the thing. So it was actually nice to hear that you guys are involved in that stuff.
Yeah, can I say something? I'm sorry. I think that's like very, very true, because the last time I've really seen someone give for charity was when the earthquake hit Haiti. I think it was the earthquake. And that was my mother, and that was because we did that. And after that, like, charity has not like really been on the same level.
So that kind of like made you get shook you guys to action. And
yeah,
then...
so we try not to take money, so we can just like, you know, help people and like just tell them to come to us. So we just tell people to tell other people, and it's just word of mouth.
Yeah, and often it is about your time that you give and being a part of an organization or starting something.
Yeah.
You're going to laugh. Keep going. Let's just play the Patrick laughing on loop at Emily.
No,
yes, Eric?
No.
I just want to point out that my company gave something like $18,000 in worth of advertising over the year, last year, to deserving nonprofits in our city. And I just think that donating is like, I don't know, a part of the American way to like kind of like absolve your guilt or something. You give to charities to try to feel better about everything you took from the environment and took from other people or something and try to give back. I don't know. I think there's a lot of giving people, especially in my town. I mean, this is a special place. But I would like to think that there are giving people out there still.
Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, we met these two guys because of a friend of ours from another neighborhood restaurant who recently got involved with this center in Williamsburg. So sometimes it's just about having a change of feeling and energy and wanting to be a part of something. We have to take a quick break, so hold that. We will be back with Winsun Bunker and the group from Help right after the break.
The interview part.
The interview part.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Korsha Wilson, and I'm the host of A Hungry Society here on HRN. A Hungry Society focuses on highlighting dope people doing amazing work in food, and we talk about how we can make the culinary world a more diverse and inclusive space. You can join the conversation by checking out A Hungry Society wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, and we're back. This is the Main Course OG, broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We were just talking about charities and supporting, and we're getting all of our neighborhood friends connected during the break. So we really appreciate, of course, Bunker and Winsun and working with young future leaders that are here in the room. So we have Trig, Josh, and Jesse from Winsun. Tell us about your new place that's opening later this month, in a couple weeks, maybe in 2020. We're unsure. No, I'm just kidding.
No, we're pretty sure now. We just passed our final inspection yesterday.
Congratulations.
Big kudos to Josh Koo for tackling that amazing feat. But we're going to roll out a bakery concept, more or less like an all-day cafe situation that corresponds like a puzzle piece to Winsun. Neighborhood's pretty lacking in terms of good coffee or good coffee shop where you can kind of hang out, do some work.
But there are bakeries, right? There is that kind of, is it Puerto Rican or Dominican bakeries?
Stella de Sicilia. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you would think it's like a Sicilian place, but it's like Argentine. Yeah. I think a lot of the folks are from, it's definitely like a multicultural bakery, but they're awesome. You know, we're going to be a completely different style of bakery. We hired a good friend of mine, Danielle Spencer, worked with her at Crafted Hospitality. She went to Taiwan with Josh earlier in the year, and she's going to do a Taiwanese American pastry case alongside of milk bun breakfast sandwiches, bings, and some to-go takeout sides, you know, vegetable sides and salads. In the evening, we'll roll out. Or in the afternoon, we'll roll out some more savory sandwiches.
Did you share my idea with Josh and your team about takeout where you don't even stop?
Yeah,
just have like a QB, a quarterback, like launching the chicken sandwiches.
Yeah, just drilling passes to people driving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It works out because Montrose is one way.
That's
awesome. Going to go towards the uptick in drive-through sales in 2020.
There's something I love about just opening a hot box, taking five sandwiches out, and putting them in a bag, and I'm in and out in 30 seconds. But this won't be a coffee shop. I mean, will you encourage people to sit and have coffee for a half hour?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
our laptops welcome.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We're set up and ready to roll with that.
Free Wi-Fi?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, free Wi-Fi. Two bathrooms.
Are you going to show World Cup games?
No, definitely not.
Why? That's only every 4 years. All right.
You can debates too, huh? Only every 4 years, right?
Yeah, exactly.
During the evening, it'll be a fun place to catch a cocktail if you're waiting for Winsun, or have a burger on a milk bun sandwich. We're also rolling out these chicken boxes that will specialize in Taiwanese fried chicken with scallion pancake and fries, essentially. We'll also probably do some fun kind of Taiwanese barbecue items, maybe like Taiwanese American, I would say.
Nice.
Like ribs and a few other.
So, have you pioneered anything in Winsun? I mean, what would be? I mean, I know you have, but like, what is the thing that you feel like you would say, "Oh yeah, we pioneered this a little bit," or we hadn't seen it done quite like this, and now it's a thing. Is it bringing Taiwanese food to New York?
I think in this, like, bringing Taiwanese food, or kind of like the education, learning something new, in that sense, definitely for sure, to like a new population. Mm-hmm. But I think in many ways, what we've done was just kind of take the torch in a few areas and just kind of bring it along a little further. Whether it's with Eddie Wong and his project with Bauhaus and his now closed restaurant, Xiao Ye, or if it's, being inspired so much by a dish that we've eaten together in the past at a mom and pop shop, which now is under threat of like being closed in the next few years. I think in those ways we kind of just carry things on and represent them in the way that, you know, we love. So, trailblazing probably in the sense of the first, and then, you know, kind of carrying the torch in the second.
Got it.
That's awesome. Jimmy, since you first opened Tigerland almost 20 years ago, what has driven you forward? What has always been sort of, what's your mission?
I'm always big on, you know, ingredients and health aspects of eating. And mission, I mean, I just want to have a cool spot for people to come chill and have a good meal where they can feel good about what they're eating and what they're supporting. Don't really have a mission.
I think that is a mission.
What did you do between Tigerland and Bunker? Did you do import-export?
I did a bunch of stuff, but I was living up in Ithaca for 2 years, too. Did a lot of health studies and subtle energy research and, I don't know, weird stuff. And also had a banh mi, perfected some banh mi recipes out there. We had a little sandwich shop in Ithaca.
Consider yourself a healthy restaurant? And do you think most restaurants are unhealthy? I mean, not really dangerous, like cancer-causing unhealthy, just like
You want me to be honest?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think eating in restaurants is particularly healthy, unless there's a focus or there's a, you know, desire to be. But we try as much as we can to, you know, source everything ethically. And, you know, I always try to find the best products. And but
Even when you guys didn't get your liquor license forever, I was like, do you need to stop buying Heritage? Because, you know, it's a little bit more expensive. You're like, no, dude, I can't open my kitchen. That's amazing. Yeah. You never veered away from that mission.
Cool. That's awesome. And you two, we have Ryan and John Carlos, who owe us information, which we will post on the Heritage Radio Network website on the main courses page.
Help.
And we will tell you more about help. But I'm just curious. I know you're starting college in the fall. How do you, are you going to, is this going to be a daily part of your life? I know you guys said you go to El Puente every day.
I wouldn't say it will be a daily part of my life, you know, because this is something that, you know, this means a lot to me personally, because I also been going through stuff as a homeless. I've been to homeless shelters. Like, it sucks, you know? So even if I'm not El Puente every day, I hope this call is able to, you know, still be around when I'm not present, you know? It's just there to help. I just wanted to be there to stay, you know?
It's a great thing to put on a college application. I launched a nonprofit to help homeless people, you know? I mean, it's really a great, great mission, very touching. Yeah. What about you?
I plan to just focus on that for a while and then maybe go to college, but I will, but just take some time, focus on it, try to get the word out there, make it as big as possible, and then maybe do something else on the same kind of spectrum with nonprofits and just focus on different things.
That's fantastic. Good for you guys. And Well, we hope you will all check back on our page, and we will share information about how you can get involved. And Winsun Bakery here in Williamsburg, and Bunker at the DeKalb Market. You have two choices, plus delivery.
Anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. Trig will fly it to you. Anyway, thank you guys all for joining us. We hope you have a wonderful Thursday.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the food world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.